I'm Kathleen Tenona. I was born into an Irish Catholic family in Buffalo, New York. I grew up going to Catholic school and attending church every Sunday. I did attend a public high school, but I'm sure that had something to do with my parents not wanting to pay tuition for four more years. We had four kids in our family. I left home to go to college, and I didn't really go back there to live. I don't really feel like I've ever had a journey as far as my spirituality is concerned. I feel like I grew up and I learned some stuff along the way. So in Catholic school, we had religion class every day. I think this was mostly learning the basics of the Old and New Testament, a lot of memorization. We never read scripture as a practice. I didn't own my own Bible. We also had science class every day, including learning about evolution. I remember going to my first confession, or what's called reconciliation. I was terrified going into this small room to speak with the priest, but he was very kind, and I got through it. I remember not really having any good sins to confess. I think my penance was to recite three Hail Marys and two Our Fathers. But my parents made us go to confession regularly. We lived across the street from the church that I grew up going to. It did become less frequent the older we got, but they still tried to make us go. I stopped going at some point, probably when I was in high school. The church was across the street, like I said, and I would walk over on Saturday afternoon when they were holding like the session, but I would walk around the block or walk somewhere else. Just a long enough time to be away that could pass for going to confession. I didn't like it. It made me feel bad. And as I got older, I started to wonder why I needed to go. Everything I had learned about God up to this point had suggested that he would already know what I had done, what my sins were. In addition, I was never really good at remembering what my transgressions were. I kind of made them up. I'm sure I did things like fight with my siblings. So I always felt like I was leaving something out when I was in confession, and then I would be in trouble for that too. But of course, I didn't get in trouble for that. The priest just listened and gave me my penance, which was always usually the same as it was the last time I went. First communion was a big deal in our house. My sister is 11 months older than I am, and I wore the dress that she wore the year before, but I was already taller than her, so it was pretty short. But my parents would not have been able to afford a second dress like that soon. When I was in high school, I did go through confirmation classes, and I picked my favorite aunt as my sponsor. This is when you're supposed to confirm your identity as a Catholic into adulthood. I didn't really feel any different. I have some memories of the nuns and priests at our school. They were stern but very caring. They switched in and out over the years, moving on to different parishes. I never knew of anyone, or at least heard of anyone, being a victim in our church until just recently. In fact, my favorite priest ever, Father Dan, was just recently was recently accused of sexual abuse. When I left home for college, I found a Catholic church on campus that I attended very sporadically. It was so much more progressive than the one that I grew up in. The priest was young and seemed pretty cool. I had never thought of my church at home as being conservative until then. I definitely felt more at home at the campus church. I felt like I was actually listening and actually getting something out of the services, but I didn't go very regularly. I met Scott, my husband, in college, and we moved to Boston for graduate school. We did get married in the church across the street from my parents, which wasn't really a choice if I wanted my family to be at our wedding. He did pass, though. It was okay because he had at least been baptized Catholic. He hadn't been confirmed, but they did overlook that. We did have to attend pre-Cana or marriage preparation classes, which was not all that bad. The worst part was when I expressed concern over changing my name, and the deacon had informed me that no one had brought that up as a concern over, like, the last 20 years. which I thought, really? Nobody had ever expressed concern over losing part of their identity. But we did have lots of discussions about expectations and how to work through things as a couple that actually were very helpful. We did occasionally attend another progressive Catholic church in Boston, but we only lived in that neighborhood for a year, and we fell off the wagon pretty quickly. Things in my life had changed me at that point. I took my college roommate for an abortion. I found out my mother had had an abortion, and I knew they weren't bad people. I realized that I wasn't special because I was baptized. I was just lucky. It wasn't until we considered having kids several years later that I brought up trying to find a place that we could go together. As an adult, I was starting to appreciate some of the things from my Catholic background. I missed going to Mass sometimes, especially at the holidays. I liked some of the stories that they told. I liked sitting in community and singing. I had become good at closing out the parts that I found oppressive or just wrong. We first tried a UU church in Bloomington, Indiana. Scott was at IU for his PhD. We really liked it right away. Scott actually had made a list of churches that we could try, different faiths, and that was number one on the list, so we just went there and that was it. The minister was somebody we both connected with. We really liked the RE program and the director of RE. Religious education was very appealing to me. These kids were exploring world religions and thinking about social justice issues. There was a lot of singing in that church. The choir director was a PhD candidate in the IU School of Music. The choir was very big. My favorite UU hymn, Wake Now My Senses, was a favorite of theirs too, and each time the chorus came on, they added more harmonies and energy. I remember falling hard after a minister came to the church for a job. Her name was Marianne Macklin, a self-described atheist. I was a believer and was surprised that she was an atheist. At that point, I didn't know much about Unitarian Universalism. The sermon that day was about the cosmos and Carl Sagan, and I was really not that excited going into it, but I loved it. I can't tell you why or what it was that she actually said about the stardust. It just moved me. And of course, Maeve was born. Our daughter Maeve was born when we were there. Sorry. She's leaving in 2 weeks, so. We had a naming ceremony for her. It was beautiful and meaningful and something I can't quite describe, obviously. I'm so happy we are here and we have raised our kids as Unitarians. Over the process of writing this piece, I have come to see my time as Unitarian Universalist as a journey engaging my spirituality. I've grown as a person in this faith. I'm engaged in this faith in a way I wouldn't be if I was still Catholic. I've been involved in RE. I've served on the board for 5 years, and who knows what else I will be called to do. These closing words are from my favorite hymn that we just sang. Wake now my conscience with justice thy guide. Join with all people whose rights are denied. Take for not granted a privileged place. God's love embraces the whole human race.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I'm nervous. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Last time I mumbled, so let's give this a try. My name is Sarah Elizabeth Althoff Desmond. No, my name does not fit on my Social Security card intentionally. Keep it simple, I say to myself every time I get married. Truth is, hyphenation confuses me, and I am not my compound adjectives. You may be thinking right now, who? What? Why? That's what I'd like to know. First, I know what I am. I'm a blood bag with a personality. When I'm asked as a white, non-Hispanic woman, what are you? I reply, I'm Canadian. No, I have less shame as I age. I say, I'm an American. And the response is usually, I'm sorry. I'm here today because I don't want to be sorry to be an American. I know us. I am us. Scared, scarred, angry, indentured servants. Always fallen in love with fighting a greedy, twisted revolution. And this one's televised. Thank you for bringing together your remote threads here to teach me how we can help keep us stitched together. To begin, I want to say I'm so glad this is over. I know for you this seems like a beginning, but I'm at the end of what felt like years of self-examination, more excruciating than Vipassana meditation. Know that at this exact moment, I am near tears with joy. Thank you, Elka, for asking me to share my spiritual journey with the UUFM community, with whom I have a sworn covenant. Now, sisters and brothers, I feel the lid dropping. I'm in the ark. Show me mercy. Promise me I can breathe underwater. Elka, like divine justice, had said to me, you don't have to cry or anything. And I'm thinking as she's saying this, my spirit is just out of ICU, my soul compass is demagnetized, and my conscience some days feels as heavy as Sisyphus's boulder. I brought tissue. My first time up here at this podium was at my sister's funeral in 2006, September. So on Memorial Day this year, here, I was reading aloud a poem I'd picked as convener. I see there, then, it's a poem of the end of life, of a spiritual journey, and another ending. And as I'm trying to breathe out, lines of the poem began to wrap around my esophagus, and my eyes tried to hydrate my cheeks. With the poem draining into my heart, I was drowning. One of those spiritual crossroads where all I could do was remember to breathe, or try to. At least I was in a room full of people training in spiritual CPR, and maybe even a few Kundalini and Reiki masters. I felt safe enough to sob, but not in front of the guest pastor, Oscar. I only wept. Maybe I'm lucky I never got religion. I saw Elmer Gantry with Grandma on TCM. Ooh, crazy. I'm grateful there's no confusing, chaotic, or traumatic, unholy alliance within my spirit. At least not that I'm aware of yet. I'm not a fan of participating in ritual, but I like watching live drama and good coffee. I grew up and into a let's try anything school of spirituality. In my lifetime, I've been a child of Rastafarians, Sufis, Methodists, Urantians, and communists. I rebelled, and I am, of course, a capitalist. Often, though, my personal myths, those that lend me fantastic courage to keep breathing, feel like plastic trash clogging the oceans. I'll gladly recycle yours. Anyway, Carl Jung says you have to share. I'm here to check out your library. My ideal living religion would be to have a mudra and a mantra for every discomfort. I'll give you my driving mantra. Time does not exist. Sabrina and I declared for Buddhism. We're Buddhists, we said to each other a couple weeks ago. Sure, why not? She and I bonded over trying to remember the murderous Siddha with the fingers strung around his neck. Milarepa, forgiveness for ending mortality. And another, and another. The tale of my sins would be soulless without glorying my life in San Francisco. I will say more than heartbreaking, elating, joyous, free, but never really home. I'm a native weed, a Kansan. But maybe San Francisco was a long layover because between 1992 and 2006, too many people died. Suddenly. Sometimes it felt like the murals of the Mission, the discos in the Castro, the river down Market Street, the cotton candy clouds crawling over the hills, the fog horns, the car horns. like ululations, wailing, amassed tinnitus under a patchwork of empty rags. We live there in the saddest facets of a brilliant jewel. This room sometimes is as close as I can get to the rainbow. To summarize my professional career in the great nation of California, one of my longtime employers was a company called Financial Engineering Associates. The best thing about it, I can tell you right now, is that we spoke the universal tongue of mathematics. We shoehorned astrophysics into electronic trading platforms that exposed Bernie Madoff and manipulated the energy markets. If I were to seek relief in a telephone cabinet of confession, my necklace is a calculus of greed now at least 6 decimal points long. Milarepa said, "In my youth, I committed black deeds. In maturity, I practice innocence." So, the Unitarians, Universalists, Unitarian Universalists, you. Like going to college, I still don't know very much about any of it. Maybe you can tell from the questions I ask. My working theory walking in, and still is that cool thing, it's transcendentalism with vampires. I live in Costa Rica, so I'm okay with the bugs. I heart all those sexy bloodsuckers. They teach me mortal gratitude and prepare me for the spark to move on through this. Meanwhile, I found out I can get free bus passes to Topeka to introduce the 12 angry men sitting on my chest to Laura Kelly. Actually, let's talk about that. Since she's not here, I met John Alou at the Democratic Caucus for the first time. I plunked my bloated, nervous breakdown of a psychic personality next to her in the bleachers. She wasn't taking up a full space, and I needed her leftovers. I knew she was a woman of some or other god, goddess, probably. She's very recognizable. Tiny. "I'm the Unitarian minister," she said. "Of course you are," I thought. Bernie won. You might remember that night. I will report to you now that for several months prior, I knew Trump would win the national election. Still pretty confused about the attitudes toward that, but we were in the heart of it. Driving down the road, gigantic Trump signs, talking to people in coffee shops, walking the streets. People don't know why they voted that way. Remember, it's not what you say, it's how you make them feel. So, yeah, nervous breakdown after the election. So I stopped watching television, posting to Reddit, Facebooking. I had to unplug or I would die. So I stumbled in here, 2018, May. Sporadically attended. Shirley had me sign the book. Didn't realize I was getting into a coffin. You know, that covenant thing sounds pretty cool now. Secret handshake. So I stumbled in here. Now John Alou, I like the way she looks at me. It's that I get that feeling that she has that confident confusion. You know, she that feeling tucks me safely into my apolitical place. And that really gets me in touch with the spiritual part of my life. Politically, today I'm starting to think about making a few phone calls, sending an email, getting some lunch from some lobbyists. Most of all, though, I want to meet with my congresswoman and ask her what bra she wears, as I did John Alou the first time I met her at Regina's, to chat about bras and marriage and, of course, God and stuff. But we didn't get around to that. That's why I keep coming back. In my lifetime, I'm most grateful for birth control. I met one of the guys that made it a pill and got to shake his hand, and I almost dropped to my knees in gratitude and prayer. Yeah, vaccines? Who wouldn't be here without them? And unfortunately, our tax dollars that were dedicated to DARPA's internet. I'm grateful for the internet. I am most ashamed of how we recycle dinosaurs, how we make war as our welfare system, and we perfect shame and hate. Children scare me less these days. Coming to UU, I can actually see their future finally, which means I can believe that they have one. The legalization of love helped a lot by restoring faith in me. Like a good American, I needed a law to explain what love is. I'm still not sure. Well, let's get this one out of the way right at the beginning. Breathing seems to be the key. Life, for me, feels like fondling water. Images of Milarepa often pose him with his hand cupped to his right ear. Some say it's a mudra, something to do with the wheat barley grass, the only thing he ate at the end of his life. I like to imagine that he's listening. Thank you for listening. May you always walk in peace. Safe journeys.
Good morning. Can you all hear me? I'm Susan Adamchak, and I'm here to talk about my journey as well. I think much of what I'm going to say, we can just say, ditto Kathleen. I too was raised Catholic, and I think our upbringings probably had a lot in common. I feel like I'm following a beat poet in Sarah's presentation, so mine's going to be a little bit more straightforward. And I'm going to illustrate mine with some pictures. As a child of a first-generation immigrant family, I'm a bit of a mutt, a mix of Irish, Polish, and Sicilian roots, with Roman Catholicism as the common denominator tying these diverse traditions together. Looking back, I would say my family was observant, but not particularly devout. We honored the holy days, ate fish every Friday, fasted before Mass on Sundays, observed Lent, and lit the Advent candles. My mother and brother and I attended Mass every week. My dad, not so much. After a brief flirtation with the public school in kindergarten and first grade, I entered the Catholic school system, where I would spend the next 11 years.
Aww.
I made my first communion and my confirmation, as Kathleen noted. My communion dress, that sweet little dress, was designed and constructed by my gay uncle. And his place in the Catholic Church during the 60s was... Okay, we can advance. Yeah. While religious training was certainly a core element of my education, circumstances conspired to allow me to peek behind the veil, so to speak. I was on the crest of the wave as baby boomers were putting pressure on community resources, and my grammar school classes typically included 60 to 65 students. No teacher's aides, no paras, just one nun in the front of the room. As you might imagine, this meant that the nuns taught to the middle, ignoring the bottom 10%, and trying to find extra tasks for those of us in the upper 10%, grading our peers' tests, tutoring classmates, helping with the lower grades. After school, a select few were recruited to help clean the convent. My time working in the convent allowed me to get to know our religious order as individuals, not simply as black-clad women of indeterminate age. When we cleaned, the nuns would often sweep up their floor-length habits and tuck them into the waistband. Gasp! Sister Mary Martin has ankles! The nuns also fostered my education beyond the classroom, taking me to performances in New York City. You remember I grew up in New Jersey. Teaching me how to clap politely. And more. And thank you, Sister Judith. We can, so confirmation picture, Sister Judith. And then continuing. High school at Mount St. Mary Academy for Girls was an education in contradictions. I entered high school in 1968. Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King had both been assassinated earlier that year. The Vietnam War was raging. Plainfield and Newark had been devastated by riots the year before. The following year would witness the moon landing and Woodstock, and soon to be followed by the publication of Ms. Magazine and Our Bodies Ourselves. Closer to home, the Sisters of Mercy had undergone their own transformation that summer. They traded their century-old habit with a full-length skirt and full wimple for a tailored A-line dress and a short veil, and they started using their birth names. Another gasp. Sister Mary John Bosco was now Sister Judy Ward, and she not only had ankles, she had hair. The Mount was an all-girls school, an institution that itself was rapidly confronting, a rapidly changing world and trying to prepare a new generation of young women for it. The class of 68 had been the first to have 100% college acceptance. We were taught Latin, French, physics, and chemistry. With no boys to flirt with or defer to, we dissected our own frogs in biology. We played cutthroat basketball, and we learned to drive. Since there were no altar boys to assist with communion, we served during the Mass. We participated in the liturgy, strummed guitar, made vestments for the priests. We sang, "Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me," with adolescent fervor and deep commitment. We left the softball diamond to trudge up the hill and put on our virginal white gowns and have tea with the directress, who would chide us for being sassy lassies. We developed such close friendships that we are still known as the corner lunch table among my classmates. It was impossible to disentangle my education and my development of deep friendships from the context of that rarefied religious atmosphere. I would add that throughout these years, I was also active in Girl Scouts, which reinforced many of the same values of community, caring, compassion, service, and independence. I was getting it from all sides. Beginning in my sophomore year, I also had an after-school job working for a Jewish family. The welcoming Gelbers exposed me to temple, to Friday Seders, and the high holidays. My immersion in the Jewish faith continued through my dear friend and grad school roommate, Carol. We celebrated Passover, Yom Kippur, Purim, and later her children's bar mitzvahs. We cooked more than our fair share of latkes, rugelach, kugel, and hamantaschen. These diverse influences fostered common shared values. Again, community, compassion, caring, service, independence, the trust and sharing of friends, being in a multi-generational circle, role models, support, social engagement, laughing with joy and crying with sorrow. And yet, I became pregnant my senior year and had an abortion. I had just committed a mortal sin. Yet I felt no different among my friends. I agonized and I prayed. How could my loving God turn away from me when I wanted to pursue my dreams of college and independence? How could he expect me and my teenage boyfriend to set up a household and start a family when we had no jobs, no prospects, no support? I would add that this same man has remained one of my most constant friends. I just spoke with him last weekend. We speak regularly. Thus began my disillusionment with the Catholic Church. I did go to college, and one of my freshman roommates was the eldest of six kids. Her father had committed suicide, and her Catholic mother had remarried a divorced man who was willing to adopt this large family. What a generous and loving gift. Her mother was excommunicated. I continued to attend Mass at a neighborhood Catholic church where most of the parishioners were elderly. This church resisted modernizing and insisted on serving communion to the altar rail at the altar rail, where I watched people totter and tumble as they tried to kneel. My cousin, whose parents were stalwarts of their Rosary Altar Society and Knights of Columbus, was refused a wedding at her childhood church because she, too, wanted to marry a divorced man. My first marriage was in an Episcopalian church because I still wanted the comfort and blessing of a religious ceremony. But my fiancé was also divorced and with a young son. I refused to request an annulment of Adam's first marriage because in my mind that negated the legitimacy of his son's birth. My second marriage was officiated by a Sufi. How far afield can I go to not embrace organized religion but still crave spirituality in my life? I had a fulfilling career supporting family planning and HIV services in some of the poorest countries of the world. How can it be a sin to help women space their children, to enable them to reduce the likelihood of at-risk pregnancies and to survive to nurture their living children, or to reduce the transmission of a fatal disease that claimed far too many? I first met Kathleen Oldfather as I was preparing to leave Manhattan in 2001, having accepted a job in Washington, D.C. after my first husband's death. When I returned 2 years later, I rejoined the board of the Manhattan Library Association and was delighted to find that Kathleen was also a member. Over time, and a glass of wine at Harry's, we became friends. As we got to know each other, Kathleen recognized our shared values and started mentioning UUFM. Not long afterwards, I also met Phoebe Samuelson and Betty Banner, and these like-minded women also shared the UUFM connection. I was invited to speak here several times, I don't know if you remember, before I joined, both about my work with women in Africa and about the mission of the Peggy Bowman Second Chance Fund, where Betty and I both served on the board. And the context of the services that I stayed for resonated with me. Finally, about 5 years ago, I began finally regularly attending services here, yet my early influences continue to shape me. Last September, I brunched with some high school friends, and Sister Judy, a.k.a. Sister John Bosco, who was the woman in the middle in the earlier slide. And in June, the corner lunch table convened once more at the Jersey Shore, 51 years on. So why UUFM for me? Community, compassion, caring, service. Children, role models, support, social engagement, the trust and sharing of Chalice Circle, being in a multi-generational gathering. Rowan actually initiated a discussion with me a couple weeks ago. Laughing with the book club ladies, crying with the bridge ladies, being my age and still making friends, feeling the strength to reach out, to support our friends, our ideals, our community, and our nation. I still don't feel immersed in Unitarian Universalism. I don't know our history well, but I'm still learning about key leaders who shaped our path. But I feel so welcome and embraced by this community. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kathleen, Sarah, and Susan. We are now going to sing hymn 324, Where My Free Spirit Onwards Leads. Thank you. We are on a journey. We didn't plan it, but look around. We are not alone. It is our journey together, a journey to our better selves and a journey to a better world. Please join us for coffee and conversation. Thank you.